nos despedimos de ustedes deseándoles que nuestros pueblos vivan noches de paz y justicia social, que si el presente es de lucha, el futuro es nuestro. Gracias y hasta la próxima.
You're listening to Back in the USSR.
Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции. Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы. Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества. Ура!
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. I am Siegfried, and at long last, after quite a few delays, quite a few little mishaps, and the fact that the rules concerning election coverage, as I've talked about before on the show, kind of prohibited me from doing this interview before. But anyways, I hope I have Clara Sorrenti on the line from Ottawa. Now, Clara, can you hear me?
From London.
That's London, Ontario, by the way. Let's make that very, very clear.
Thank you for clarifying that one.
Yes. So anyway, Clara is the was the Communist Party candidate in the provincial election in London. North Center, I believe, is the riding you were in, right? Because, I mean,
the provincial leader of the Communist Party of Canada, Ontario, ran in London North Center in the previous election, too. And
right. That's true. I think I remember that. So basically, Clara has been described in, I've been planning on interviewing her for a while now. I mean, she was running quite an energetic campaign in the provincial election there, which was a very hard fought campaign definitely in London. I mean, that wasn't the only place, but definitely there. And she was described as young, determined, unapologetically communist by the London Fuse on June 4th, 2018 in an article down there. And she was running in the Communist Party candidate in London North Center riding, which was the riding held by the former health minister, if I recall. Was that right?
I am not actually aware of that.
Yeah, it said that the Liberal MPP and health minister, Deb Matthews, who was not seeking re-election.
Oh, yes. Kate Graham ran.
Okay. That's kind of what I was wondering about. So, anyways, I want to ask you, just right off the bat, the first question is more or less, why did you decide to run in this election? And what do you believe was really at stake in this election? What really made it so important?
Well, the reason I decided to run in the election is because since I turned 18, I had always been involved in electoral politics. I first got involved with the New Democratic Party on Peggy Sattler's campaign. I was nominator when she ran against current city councillor Mohamed Salih. But around that time, socialism was removed from the constitution of the NDP.
Mm-hmm.
They pushed the party further centrist, and then eventually even pushing it right in some regards. And I could no longer stand by a party that didn't support the same values as me.
Right. And this was actually something I was going to ask you about as well. Like, in terms of when you joined the Communist Party in the first place. Well, first of all, did socialism really drive you to join the NDP originally?
Yeah, no, it did. Like, as a teenager growing up with Jack Layton, that was definitely my first drive towards politics.
Right. And, of course, so them taking socialism out of the platform, removing it entirely from their entire mode of operation, stuff like
and
that.
And not only that,
the
entire history section of the Cooperative Commonwealth Federation, they completely tried to remove any legacy of progressive change that they brought to the country.
Mm-hmm. So what inspired you to get involved with the CPC in particular after you left the NDP? You know, like joining the Communist Party, that's still a major step.
After the election of Donald Trump when I got involved.
Right. So that was
The Charlottesville riots happened and people were marching, holding torches, yelling, "Jews will not replace us." I felt like the current political options are not going to keep people safe.
Right. So it was basically the rise of the far right played a major role in you deciding to become a communist.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And so, and seeing that kind of threat emerge, right? And
especially London, which historically has been the heart of the fascist movement in Canada. The Canadian Nazi Party was founded here.
Right.
The Ku Klux Klan would burn crosses on the property of the person who founded that party, Martin Weiss.
Yeah. So this is like a very, you know, you see this threat going on in London right now, like around
Absolutely.
You.
Around the city, you can even identify neo-Nazis. They openly wear swastika necklaces.
Wow. Yeah, that is pretty scary.
That, people outside the city don't talk about a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, no kidding. I mean, you definitely don't see that in the media, you know, getting covered, getting talked about, that sort of thing. But obviously, like, if it's going on around you, I mean, you're seeing this. So, but like focusing on the election, like I said, the article I was reading in the London Fuse was talking about how it was a really tight race in the riding you were in between the Greens, the Liberals, the NDP, and the PC.
Oh, that's
that. And it was really. It was really quite intense, like, kind of campaign. And it talked about how you kind of were stuck in the other category, so to speak, and that getting noticed was a tough one for you because you were up against kind of almost a, I guess not entirely a media blackout, but something approximate to that to some degree,
oh, yeah.
Seeing if you're in another candidate. So what was it really like to fight such an uphill battle, and what tactics did you find effective in order to, well, you know, get noticed, like, in the campaign?
Definitely. I agree with you. I do think that there was a deliberate effort to censor me. Rogers TV, for instance, invited our party leader, Dave McKee, to debate in the last election. They had our contact information. So did all the other stations. It's all publicly listed.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew it was because something was going on. It was very obvious when, through social media, I was able to get so much coverage. But mm-hmm. locally, there was nothing. Besides the London Views article you mentioned, no one else reached out.
Wow. So you found, like, social media to be the real, the really useful tool for getting past that? Or, like, were there
Absolutely.
Other tools? Yeah? Like, so how did you really make use of that?
Through it, I mean, there's, in every city, there are, for instance, Facebook groups for everything. It's very easy to get the word out if you need to the community without using corporate media.
Yeah, so it was mainly, like, Facebook was the most useful, like, platform, like,
to
really reach people?
Like, London, Ontario buy and sell groups about culture, groups for music, there are all sorts of ways to get in contact with people locally in the community.
Mm.
Besides that, I literally just went door to door. I went business to business. I even found businesses that became supporters of the Communist Party.
Wow! So how did that work? Like that's not something I've seen before.
Pharma shop, and I just went in there to canvass. I was like, "Hello, my name's Clara. I'm the London North Centre candidate for the Communist Party." And it turns out. That it was a family that was from the Soviet Union.
Wow.
He said he's even going to join the party in September. I'm really excited to see, like, all of this progress that's going on. People who would otherwise be afraid to call themselves a communist are now stepping out.
Right. Which, of course, that's quite a phenomenon, seeing the kind of society that we live in, which kind of marginalizes people who express these kind of views, like, say, the radical revolutionary views.
Mm. I definitely think it's just the result that the Soviet Union collapsed, and they keep trying to use anti-communist propaganda, but they keep going in the past. They can't point to anything wrong about Cuba now. They can't point to anything wrong about China that isn't dispensationalized. They have to go back into black and white archives, and they have to try and attach us to things that have nothing to do with the Communist Party of Canada.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I remember that definitely was the case when I was running in the federal election back in 2015. I remember that, actually. I mean, I got there was definitely some red baiting, which I faced. You know, like one time, you know, I'm just at like a debate which happened in a senior center, actually in Guelph, and it was like, basically this old Polish guy came out to me and basically talked about how, you know, in 1945, you know, supposedly the communists did something to his family, you know, and they're just like, you know, like someone in this family got sent to Siberia or something like that, and this is the kind of thing which. Well, yeah, like I say, like, that's about the only thing you really can get.
What I try and do is make people understand that just because it has the same name, it is not the same party. A Hungarian man, he approached me when I was going door to door, and what I told him that I think made sense to him was, I asked him, is there a liberal party in Hungary? And he said, yes. And I said, are they the same party as the Liberal Party of Canada?
Right.
And he said, no.
Well, no.
Two different parties, two different histories.
Yeah, like, exactly. I mean, you're dealing with completely different histories, different historical time periods, different conflicts going on, all this sort of stuff. And, of course, we know what that's like, you know, you know, facing the like red baiting. I mean, there was that incident, and then there was the incident which happened when I was in a, they didn't even allow me to speak at this one. And that's something I'm going to ask you about, like with some of the debates you dealt with. But I mean, in this particular case, this was actually a Fair Vote Guelph event, you know, like Fair Vote Canada. Like this was a local chapter, and they didn't allow me on the panel because I didn't meet their criteria. You know, I mean, our party was too small to fit in with the, you know, with their, They were going on the New Zealand model of like of proportional representation. We wouldn't have made the cut, I guess, if we were using the New Zealand model in terms of the proportion of the vote we got. But anyway, I actually did get red baited there by like a member of the audience when I actually stood up and demanded to be on the panel. And this guy basically set up and said, oh yeah, if the communists ever won, there would be no more elections. And just like, spouting out this vitriol, like an older man here. I don't know what his background was. He seemed like a white Anglo guy, though. So
I mean, my family is from Italy. I can tell you that the Italian communists won many elections without ending elections.
Right. Because anybody who really knows that kind of history, right? Because see how what nonsense that is.
They're not looking to learn. They're looking to heckle you.
Of course. So anyway, so I'm going to ask you about like what your experience was in getting shut out of debates, because I mean, I hear you did have to fight hard sometimes to get a place. And so what was that like? Like what was the situation with the debating and getting on debates in London?
Well, I only was able to get on to one debate in London. There were several debates. And only two of them I was actually invited to. I could have applied to a third at the school, but as a small party, we don't have our own campaigning headquarters or armies of volunteers. We're mostly doing it on our own.
Mm-hmm.
So while I was shut out of many debates, I will concede that there was the high school debate, which I was too overworked to attend.
Right.
And the CIBC debate, not CIBC, CBC.
CBC debate.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be invited to the CIBC debate.
Like, if they had one.
Yeah.
Right.
The CBC debate, I had to turn that one down because that was the day that Dave McKee and Adrian Welsh, leader of the Young Communist League, came down to London. That was also the day the London Fuse article was published.
Right. So on the 4th.
Right. I found one tactic very useful, just calling out their pages, make sure the call out is public so everyone can see it, and every response that they give you is also made public.
Right. So this is on social media doing this.
Oh, yeah. And I did get some responses from Rogers through that. I did get the London Youth Advisory Council reached out and apologized to me for not inviting me to an event where they invited other counselors. I mean, other candidates.
Mm-hmm. So you actually did get an apology one time?
One time.
Right.
But it's still more than in previous years, I guess.
Right.
Actually, no, that's not true. As I said, Rogers made the decision not to invite us this year, even though they did in the previous year, previous election.
And there was no explanation for that?
No explanation. They tried to say it was because it was a community organized event, but I don't buy when they say things like that to me. Anyone there could have said anything.
Right.
Any of the other candidates, Terence Kernahan, who was elected, he could have made the decision at every single debate to say, I would only participate if all the candidates are represented.
Right.
But he doesn't make.
But he doesn't do that.
No. He likes that I got shut out of the debate.
Right. It's like that is his stance, like his reactionary stance, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I approached him at the only debate I managed to make it to, the London Health Coalition debate. And, you know, he tried to shake my hand. I told him no. I was really mad.
Well, yeah, no kidding.
And when I said, why don't you speak up about it, he said, am I supposed to?
Mm-hmm.
What the hell is that supposed to mean if he's trying to represent the people in the community and he's not trying to make it so all the people are informed about all their political choices?
Right. I mean, come on. Right? I mean, and he tries to shake your, yeah, he tries to shake your hand, be, act, yeah, act all friendly,
I don't
act all
like
nice.
The politician act. I can see that from a mile away.
Yeah. It is not hard to, you know, pick out that kind of thing. So, like, so in that one debate, you did get, you said that was the Health Coalition debate. Like, how did that pan out? How did that go?
That went great, I think. Like, we had a whole row of supporters, and it's because we already work closely with the London Health Coalition. Some of our members who also are in medical school work with the London Health Coalition because we are trying to fight the fact that London has the worst hospitals in the entire province.
Mm-hmm. Like, facing austerity in, like, really, really hard.
Yeah, well, they instituted May 1st or June 1st the hallway transfer protocol at Victoria Hospital. So what that means is that they can see patients in hallways. And they went further, and I haven't seen any of the other politicians bring this up, even at the debate, that in it, they define hallway as any unconventional space that can accommodate a bed or a stretcher.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, toilet room, bathroom, if it's a crisis, they will see patients out of them, apparently. That's where healthcare is in London.
Oh, my God. Because that was my next question, actually, is, like, what are the material conditions in London right now? And how do you think the Communist Party platform, how do you think that they would improve them? Like, really? I know the platform that we're running on this really anti-austerity platform, right? And, like, obviously, it sounds, based on that picture you're giving me,
austerity is hitting hard. I approached a lot of people on the street about the policies, and I found the ones that people really liked are childcare policies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, single parents who have to somehow juggle raising a kid and holding a job to support their kid. It's just not a feasible situation. And people wonder why the birth rate is declining.
Mm-hmm.
Besides that, I found that convenience store clerks and owners were very supportive of the Communist Party and our plan to cut the harmonized sales tax.
Right. Which, of course, is a regressive tax, mm-hmm. right? Like, flat tax, basically affecting, like, the ones who are least able to pay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you found that they were really responding to the... that's interesting. Like you said, like, convenience store owners were responding favorably to that.
Well, I mean, a lot of people who run convenience stores, they're running it by themselves or they're running it with their family, and it's not always a very profitable venture.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe the reason it resonated so well is because of the problem with cigarettes and how they've raised taxes so high on it that it drives away business, and cigarette business was one of their main sources of business. They also have to compete with on reserve cigarettes, which do not have the taxes applied.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to get into whether or not that is something that should be an issue. That's not the point.
Yeah. So, because, like, this kind of goes into just general condition. I mean, there's quite high levels of unemployment, I should say, in London right now, right? And just, like, what is the, you know, like, London's a former, like, industrial city. So what is the situation with industry in London right now?
The situation with the industry, we had the Caterpillar Corporation, I think it was in 2011 or 2012 when they decided to shut down. They moved all the way to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Where people were paid half the wages they were paid to work in the London factory. So, and that was all thanks to NATO.
Right.
I mean, NAFTA.
NAFTA. So once again, you have, like, the free trade kind of, like, agreements that result in the city basically becoming a Rust Belt city.
Yeah, and London is definitely a Rust Belt city. We lost... in recent years, the Kellogg's factory, in former years, the McCormick's factory. There's there's more business coming up, but unfortunately that business is related to defense.
Mm-hmm. This is like the armaments industry moving in.
It's Siva Logistics, I believe.
Right. So, because this is, I was hearing about this. This was like the, and this was defended by Unifor, if I recall, like earlier this year. Like these the arms industry really expanding its role. I believe it was armored combat vehicles, and this was like the armored combat vehicles that were going to get sold to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And which have since been used in Yemen, and we actually do know that because Yemeni resistance fighters have actually knocked out some of them and actually have posed for pictures with these, you know, combat vehicles, which were sold to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia used them in aggressive war in Yemen, and then they were knocked out, and here they are for all to see, right?
And
manufactured
it's
in London.
It's a bad situation because employment is so scarce in London that a lot of people are willing to take it, even though they have a moral conflict with what they're doing.
Right, because I was going to ask you, like, what role... So the arms industry is effectively the only real big manufacturing industry left. Is that right?
I know that there's also a vibrant tech industry blooming in London. There's StarTech. There's a few gaming studios that have been opening up.
Right.
Besides that, no new industry is really popping up in the city.
Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty bleak kind of picture. Like especially if you're talking.
But they're just implementing bus rapid transit now.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that they came up with in the 1970s. They never implemented in our city. We're larger than many of the surrounding cities, but we don't even have 24-hour buses here. So if you work a night shift job, you need to have a car or you need to live close.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because obviously you can't get anywhere with public transit at that time. So yeah, but about the arms industry, just to talk a little more about that, has it been like an obstacle for you at all? Like, I mean, have you talked to people who, you know, you tell them about all the progressive policies that the Communist Party has that we're talking about, like, you know, jobs, reinvigorating the economy, this sort of thing, and putting power in the hands of working people. But then they're relying on these arms manufacturers. So when we talk about, like, say, you know, having like a peaceful like policy abroad, not like manufacturing like arms, like are they resistant on the basis of that, or
an issue because the people who work there make enough money that they're usually in suburbs,
right,
and other neighborhoods that I completely avoided during my campaign because the policies that the Communist Party wants to put through are the policies that the people living in geared to rent housing or living on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Going to the methadone clinics. London actually has the second highest rate of syringe use under Vancouver.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty serious.
Yeah, no, it definitely is a problem. Combined with the healthcare crisis in London, I don't see any way out of it that doesn't involve breaking out of the political mold here.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, the need for systemic change, if you're actually really going to face these problems, right? Mm-hmm. So I actually want to read a quote from Communist Party of Ontario leader Dave McKee. And I'm assuming he said this at the same time he was there and was visiting you with Adrian and helping out with the campaign. And he said, you know, about you, she's been extremely energetic in her campaign. As a young person, she has a lot of ideas on outreach. She helps us make sure that we're speaking to that particular section of the working class, as well as to an older demographic. So I really wanted to ask you, what has the response to the campaign been from young people in particular? Like, 'cause that seems to be really a group that you're really trying to energize in this.
Definitely positive among young people. I find it's more positive among the people who grew up in London than the students that come here from out of the city.
Mm.
London is definitely known as a big student town. We have Western University. It's also known as one of the most conservative campuses in the country.
Yeah, Western.
Yeah. So it has been an uphill battle with the youth. So I find the people in London feel very disenfranchised because, as I said, with job perspectives, if you don't have a car, you can't work a night shift. Most of the jobs here are minimum wage jobs, which aren't providing a living wage. You can't expect to raise a family on one of those.
Yeah. So, like, the prospects of especially... So, youth unemployment, I'm assuming, is probably higher than general unemployment.
Oh, absolutely.
By a pretty major, like, factor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in London. So,
It's absolutely ridiculous. I have friends who work at call centers here, and they did the math, and they found out that the company itself, 10% of what it makes goes to paying them. Only 10%. And they're all making under a living wage because the minimum wage can't provide.
Yeah, like it can't support.
Mm-hmm.
like what they have. And so that's like the $14 minimum wage as it stands right now.
Yeah. I mean, there was a study, it was back in 2015, but they found that a living wage would be around $20 an hour if you lived in Toronto.
Mm-hmm. And so that's why, of course, the Communist Party has been saying, like, we should have a living wage and saying that should be $20, mm-hmm. right?
And also that we want to introduce a tenant bill of rights and we want to curb homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
And homelessness is definitely a big issue facing the city. And over the past 10 years, everyone I know has said that the issue has gotten worse. I can look outside my apartment window right now and I can see empty buildings and I can see homeless people sleeping outside of those empty buildings.
Mm. So once again, this is a very pervasive problem. Like, this is something you see every day. Like, just all around. And just like it's...
right. If you ever go to London, you'll notice one thing. People often say, don't go to east of Adelaide. But east of Adelaide makes up the majority of the city.
Right. And this is like the most depressed area.
Mm-hmm.
Like economically.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the biggest problems, too, is where new industries popping up, especially in the tech industry. It's all in the outskirts of the city, which come into the same problem of you need a car.
Mm-hmm.
Or you need to find someone to carpool with, but you can't rely on public transit.
Yeah. So it's only like people who are basically, well, are privileged to some degree who can, you know, access those kind of jobs. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I'm assuming there are like relatively limited numbers of jobs anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A lot of people I know my age have left the city because they can't find work here.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously this is a real challenge for youth. So you found like youth were very responsive to the, like what in the platform were they most responsive to?
They were responsive to the policies to remove taxes if you make under $40,000 a year.
Right.
And they were responsive. They were definitely responsive to cutting sales tax, childcare. They were really responsive to all of our housing things.
Mm-hmm.
Housing is definitely one of the biggest issues facing millennials.
Yeah, so saying housing is a human right, which we do. I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah, during the London Health Coalition debate, I asked Kate Gren, the Liberal candidate, actually said on stage that she does not believe housing is a human right.
Yeah, like she... So the mask came off, like, when she said that, needless to say.
Yeah, and we realized it was... I don't understand how people for decades in the city have elected Liberal and Conservative governments.
Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, when we're facing these kind of problems and they obviously don't have any means, any desire really to solve them.
Mm-hmm.
Like certain in terms of, their policies and this sort of thing. So you got that response from the youth. And but you also, like for people from an older demographic, did you really make inroads there as well?
I did. As I said, the business owner that ended up supporting us, he runs Wow Shawarma. I think I excited a lot of older people with left-leaning political values because there has been such a history of a red scare in this country and in the United States too,
mm-hmm.
that a lot of the older demographic who share our values are afraid to embrace them.
Right. Like afraid to really express that kind of stuff like publicly, like because they're worried.
And it's so silly too, because I mean, we live in a society that's like predominantly Christian, and you read like Jesus's writings, he was mad that people were trying to sell things outside of holy sites.
Right. Like obviously this is 2,000 years ago, right? But I mean there's still class struggle going on. And Palestine for that matter was colonized by Rome. So there was, you know, resistance to colonialism as well. So all this stuff, like, you, once again, this is the context. Like, you're always looking at the material context of the time. And, you know, whether that's in London or, like, wherever else in the world. And the kind of struggles going on. And yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously it's not going to be framed in those terms.
Like, no, it's really strange how they've, or the United States, where they seem to be taking more and more of a step towards religion and government.
Mm-hmm.
And they even quoted, like, when Jeff Sessions was talking about the immigrant crisis in the United States, he quoted the Bible.
Yeah.
And it was a verse that just said that you should respect the law.
Yeah, I believe it was St. Paul. He was quoting St. Paul, and this is the same time they were talking about, you know, they're imprisoning kids. Right? Separating kids from their parents.
You don't need to be a devout Christian to know that that is not what Christianity stands for.
Yep. But that's a quote. If I understand that the quote he used, that's been used many, many times.
Yeah.
Like going back to when he first made it, which of course was to justify subservience to the Roman Empire. And they're still using that today. Jeff Sessions still using that quote today to justify, you know, locking kids up in cages.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
It's just like,
it's barbaric.
ICE was caught using the Nuremberg defense.
Right. Like they're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, this is like, we still have to fight against this, like today, you know, this kind of horrific, you know, kind of things going on. But of course, like we also know that, you know, in Canada as well. I mean, Canada is not immune to this sort of thing. Regardless of what, Justin Trudeau says, we also lock up kids in detention facilities here, you know, and even CBC like wrote articles on that recently, you know, like this is like hundreds in the last 5 years.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's definitely not even a new issue.
No.
It's, I found it a bit bewildering how much media attention it's been getting recently, considering that a lot of policies didn't even start in the Trump administration. This has been an ongoing issue for more than a decade.
Mm-hmm. But to once again, like, zero in on Ontario here, like, because now, of course, we do have the Conservative majority in Queen's Park. You know, they came out on top in this election, and certainly I remember on that election day there were a lot of downcast faces because of that, and a lot of people who were drinking, for that matter, in response to Doug Ford getting the premiership. Not that it was even, you know, it was not a surprise, though. So what do you think the, in terms of how the struggle is going to carry on here? Because obviously we have a lot to do. We're fighting against like a very strong reactionary force here in this province, and like, you know, talking about the far rights, mm-hmm. you're seeing the far right being entrenched in places like London, and now
Speaking of that, are you familiar with the group Pegida?
Yeah.
So they started up in London around the time Donald Trump was elected.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a lot of counter demonstrations against them, and they went away for a while, but then after Doug Ford was elected, they announced they're starting protests again.
Right.
And we found photos of some of the Pegida members wearing Doug Ford shirts at the Doug Ford convention that was held in London.
My God.
Yeah.
But this is the kind of thing, right? I mean, you saw that with Trump. I mean, how his election is going to invigorate the far right and, you know, make it look like, okay, we can do whatever we want now. We have, like, all this leeway now. We have, you know, people in power who kind of, like, you know, they're sympathetic to us. And it's the same with Doug Ford. Like, you know, say Pegida coming back just as Doug Ford comes in, right? So, I mean, it looks like that's I believe in, like, Hamilton, too. They're having issues with this, you know, and even in Toronto, like far-right forces being invigorated by this. So, how do you find, like, in terms of resisting that? Like,
it's interesting, like, you bring that up, because London only elected NDP members.
Right.
And that's definitely a first for this city, too. It's I'm not sure what the next 4 years is going to look like for London, but I know that there's going to be a lot of people who are very discontent, because in every riding we have people who cannot affect policy change.
Mm-hmm.
We have people who can only try and comfort people who are going to be hurt by the policies coming in. And I really hope that the message of this election has been, you can't reform the capitalist system.
Right. And so you're seeing, like, more and more people interested in you know, who have been victimized by capitalism and who are increasingly turning towards communism. Like, you're seeing that, like, in terms of the people who want to join, in London.
And there was also a lot of resistance, too. We had most of our lawn signs stolen during this election.
Yeah, I think I actually saw, like, the post on that you made on social media.
Yeah.
And remember, like, that is pretty depressing, well, in the sense, like, that does happen.
Really, when they try and tell us that our beliefs are bound for failure, that we'll never get anywhere, but they don't stop trying to sabotage us at every corner.
Mm-hmm. Like, they're still, like, afraid, like, of us in that sense, right? And if they're willing to do things like that.
And I got the sense of fear during this election, during my run, during all of those call-outs, because of the amount of people who went silent, even when their supporters were mad at them.
Yeah.
Because if they tried to talk to me, especially publicly, they would only legitimize me.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
That's why I think that they're trying to keep me out of the debate. And in the next federal election, I'm really interested to see if they're going to try this again.
Yeah, because, of course, that's coming up next year.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you planning on running again?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So overall, you thought that this, well, I mean, the CPC overall, I mean, how many candidates? We have about 14 in the province, right? And so how do you think the CPC did overall in the election? Like, is it promising? Like, is this something, does it look like we're really moving forward here?
I'll be honest. This is my first time running as a candidate with the CPC. And this is my first election supporting the CPC as well.
Yeah.
I joined, I think, in the months after Trudeau announced that there was going to be electoral reform.
Right, and that's, like, one of his promises,
right.
Infamous promises that went, obviously did not go anywhere.
Mm.
Like, similar to all the environmental promises that he made.
Yeah, so I was really mad. Everyone, my whole family voted Liberal just because they wanted to see the end of First Past the Post.
Wow. Well, yeah, I'm not actually surprised, I mean, by that. I mean, he had a lot of people, you know, really going on that, you know? Like, it definitely was a very animating thing, like, back in 2015, if I remember.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone was talking about that.
I remember even the news, all of the... He got everyone in the country excited. His biggest promises ended up being the lies, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, promising that Canada would follow the UN Charter on the Rights of Indigenous People.
Yep.
Completely fell through.
Exactly.
I mean, I think it's almost a joke, considering that the Liberal and Conservative parties were the parties in power under the residential school system.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, of course. I mean, going back.
That they think that they can just try and get people to forget it. And,
yeah.
And then make a promise that they're going to stop. But it there was no outrage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it was definitely like the backlash should have been much bigger than it actually was,
mm-hmm.
right? Like against these kind of things. I mean, obviously, Indigenous people themselves were very much mobilized, or increasingly mobilized around these things, like especially around the environment, missing and murdered Aboriginal women, which of course is another thing he broke his promises on. Mm-hmm. They're getting organized, but if you're talking about the settler population, it's pretty disappointing. Like,
yeah,
in
no,
terms of
exactly
the levels of organization.
About,
yeah.
There definitely needs to be more involvement. I think over the next 4 years, there's going to be a lot more involvement and activism. Like, Doug Ford, even before becoming premier, has announced he's cutting the green energy program.
Mm-hmm.
And he announced that he's going to be doing a public hiring freeze.
Yeah.
Now, like, we already need more doctors. We need more nurses. People are being treated in the hallways.
Yeah.
As I said.
Like, as you said.
As routine.
So it's like, yeah, so this crisis is, the crisis of capitalism is only going to get worse under Doug Ford, obviously. You know, regardless of all the absurd promises he makes about, like, what is it, like $1 beers and, like, all this kind of nonsense. It's like, well,
yeah.
There are kind of more important things. But like I say, like, what do we expect from people like that? It's very, very similar to Trump. I think maybe the comparison can be taken too far, but there's a lot of like parallels
that do exist. I found some of the comparisons to be disingenuous, to be frank. I do not agree with Doug Ford, but from what I've seen of him, he has made a more of a conscious effort not to be as much of a loudmouth as Donald Trump. Like that
isn't hard to do.
Vitriol.
that is not a difficult thing to do, to be a less of a loudmouth than Donald Trump.
The two things that he could really run on, he is not as mean as Donald Trump, and he does not smoke crack like his brother did.
Right.
That's what he's got.
Well, and also he has, you know, less capacity to do damage because he's not like the most powerful leader on the planet.
No, it's
in the way that
province,
Donald Trump, right?
Thankfully. And
thankfully.
He's not in charge of the world's largest military.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that kind of constrains the damage that he can do. But once again, locally and regionally, he still obviously can inflict quite a bit of pain.
With the hiring freeze,
yeah,
people will die.
Like, people will die from that.
People will definitely
like on
die.
That.
The hospitals here run at 140% capacity on average.
Mm-hmm.
People routinely, just like my father, do not receive the proper care because doctors are so overworked, nurses are so overworked, and there's a bed crisis too.
Yeah. So this is getting increasingly like the situation in the States, frankly.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been they've just been gutting the public health care program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in terms
and
of access to services.
I can't see it getting any better in the next 4 years. I can only really hope that people will see it and realize that these options that we're given, these big three, they don't work.
Mm-hmm. And this includes the NDP.
This definitely includes the NDP.
Mm-hmm. So what did you really think of, like, the, they won in London, like, this sort of thing. So, like, what did you think of the NDP campaign there?
The NDP campaign was definitely big. I gotta say, I was a bit envious that they had a campaign headquarter for every candidate. maybe we'll get one next year. We'll see.
Right. But it's just like you're just seeing like the resources that they have, and
this is
obviously something that
they have a lot of money at their disposal. They have teams of phone canvassers, and They definitely did run a good campaign. And as being from the NDP, I learned a lot of my tactics in canvassing and campaigning from them.
Right. So like
because they what they do differently than the Conservatives, which is why they probably got all the seats in the city, is that they go door to door. They shake people's hands. They talk to them. They listen to their concerns.
And this is something you did.
That's something I did.
Yeah. Because it seemed like you were very, very active doing that.
Oh, yeah. We distributed more than 5,000 leaflets during that campaign.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
That was just door to door.
Yeah. I mean, that's something we tried to do in Guelph as well. We had like a lot less people though. So it was quite a bit harder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We do have a very small presence in the city now, like seeing most of the people who used to be communists here. And this is like largely is because we're a university town. They're all in Toronto now.
Yeah. So you get a lot of that in London too.
Mm-hmm. So that does make things a bit challenging. So you pretty much just have to work with what you have. And, you know, like obviously
but
you have limited resources
on the flip
there too.
Side, I do think that there's more hope for the movement in Rust Belt cities like the ones that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the resources get diverted to Toronto and other big metropolitan areas.
Oh, yeah. And this sort of thing, where, of course, like now it's, you know, almost impossible to, to rent apartments and things like that because it's so expensive.
Oh, yeah. And even in London, plenty of people I know who would call themselves conservative decided to swing vote towards the NDP.
Right.
Because they were so upset that Doug Ford's plan seemed to only encompass Toronto. Like for a provincial campaign, he made specific promises to upgrade Toronto public infrastructure.
Right. Like he's completely focused on that.
Yeah. And meanwhile, you go back to London, where we have the worst hospitals in the city, and he just initiated a public hiring freeze.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So obviously, you notice that there's people who maybe even if they're lifelong conservatives, end up being alienated by some of the policies that he's pursuing.
Mm-hmm. I think it's because a big part of it had to do, the whole country was aware of Andrew Lawton running for parliament.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he never stood a chance. That was definitely blown up. Peggy Sattler won in less than 3 hours after polls closed with a majority.
Yeah, like in that riding.
Yeah. People really, really did not like that Andrew Lawton was running, or that Doug Ford decided to kick out a candidate that wanted to run in that riding for him.
Yeah, which he did like in several places around the mm-hmm. around the province, right? I mean, that was, like, I guess, one of the most controversial things he did, like within, I guess, the conservative movement, like alienating local people.
He definitely alienated the city.
Mm-hmm. So there was another Communist Party candidate running in London. Like in another one of the ridings in London, so
Michael Lewis.
That was Michael Lewis, right? So how exactly did that campaign end up going? Like, was there a lot of collaboration between you and him?
We tried to, but unfortunately, he had a house fire in the months previous, and he wasn't able to devote as much time as he wanted to the election.
Right. So he's dealing with all like personal matters.
Yeah,
basically.
During the election, I even launched a fundraiser for him so he could help keep his house. He was there was a chance he was going to lose it to the city, but we managed to get enough money, and we were really happy since he does a lot of the print work for the party,
mm-hmm.
and not just in London, but for the country.
Yeah, and so you have like a space, like the Communist Party has a space, like in London, like this was like the this arts collective.
Yeah,
which I believe was mentioned.
Village Arts Collective is where we've been meeting for the past several months. Now it is it's a shared space between several groups, mostly artists.
Yeah, and so you found like they're pretty supportive, like with the the party and whatnot.
Yeah,
they
and
work
I'm on
with
the board
you.
Of directors there. We host a lot of shows, and we just in the storefront we usually keep like copies of people's voice
Mm-hmm.
And we host our meetings and our events through the event page.
Yeah, so you're kind of like involved with the local art scene to some degree then.
Oh, yeah, and I volunteer for a lot of shows.
Yeah, so like all this stuff just going on. So most of this is just like kind of like just volunteer, like people showing up,
yeah.
Going there.
No one
and...
involved is actually making any money. It all goes back towards operating the space.
Mm.
So we run like art galleries, workshops. A lot of bands like to come through.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like you have like quite a bit of like local talent, like local kind of voices.
Oh, yeah, like a lot of local bands.
Mm-hmm. So, and you find that's useful, like for connecting with people, like that kind of a scene.
Absolutely. Because we have a space we can meet and we can keep our literature there. So even when we're not around, people know that we're there.
Yeah. So do you also find like there's people who used to be in the NDP like you who like similarly have been increasingly radicalized and are thinking about joining the party you already have?
If there's anyone in the Communist Party who used to be involved in electoral politics, chances are that they used to be NDP.
Mm-hmm.
Because you used to be able to make the argument that they were a socialist party. And for a lot of left-leaning people, that was enough.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, now that isn't there.
Yeah.
And obviously that was what made the difference for you.
That was absolutely what made the difference for me, because that's not just a buzzword. That's a belief system.
Mm-hmm.
That you believe that the people should hold power instead of capital. That's
yeah.
why it's socialism.
Yeah, so you're making that distinction.
Yeah. So when they dropped it, what do they stand for?
You know, and it's like, it's a good question, right? Like, cause it looks like they're just another, you know, like
oh, yeah.
they just have like some things they're going to throw the people's way, some policies, but ultimately they're going to be defending capital.
Absolutely. They already, they're not even making unions as happy as they used to.
Yeah. I've kind of been noticing that, like some of these policies and stuff. Like, I mean,
I got a lot of NDP members who, because they're unhappy with their own party's policies, they want me at those debates.
Right. And so, like, and has there been, like, any response from people who are in the labor movement to you in London? Yeah, like, you've been talking to them?
It's a difficult situation, I think, because a lot of them I know personally, and they support me on a personal level, but on a political level, I don't think they can show support.
Right. Because they feel like they're tied to, you know, like the establishment, you could say.
They are. Because if you're a leader in a union, if you're a union steward, supporting the communists, that's something that's really going to put you in trouble.
Yeah. Well, basically, ever since McCarthyism, right? That was definitely the case, you know. So we compared to like what it used to be.
Yeah, though things are changing.
Yeah, I mean they have to change, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Like if you want to effectively fight against like this kind of you know monstrosity that exists now, like right wing reactionary structure that we're facing, like mm-hmm. this is like you have to be equipped. You have to be equipped for that. And obviously, it seems like the NDP increasingly is showing that it is absolutely not.
Yeah, no, I mean, I remember their campaign ads. They were in a soft-spoken voice. They said, our leader, Andrea Horvath, is just going to ask the rich for a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're just going to nicely ask them, and they're going to be like, okay, well, here you go.
Yeah, here you go. Oh, my God. So, yeah. Obviously, there needs to be a lot of movement here, right?
No, I mean, just like the slogan, we can't ask for change.
No.
We need to demand change.
Yeah, so you have to take that, right? That's like, you know, they don't give that. You have to take it.
Yeah, it's right? It's a fight. It's something you win. You the capitalists, they will just take and take and take. The only time they ever give concessions is when people start fighting back, mm-hmm. and they're scared.
Yeah. And that obviously is where we need to be.